You are listening to WRFG Atlanta, 89.3 FM. Up next, Alternative Perspectives, Atlanta's only queer radio hour. Hold on tight. It's Double Dutch Bus by Frankie Smith. I actually love that song, but I don't know if you've heard that before. So you are listening to WRFG Atlanta, 89.3 FM. Welcome to Alternative Perspectives. This is Atlanta's only local radio hour devoted exclusively to issues affecting Atlanta's queer community. I am your host, Greg Bossen. Thank you so much for listening. The opinions expressed here are those of myself and my guests and do not necessarily represent the views of WRFG, its employees, board, volunteers, funders, or listeners. So now tonight's show, first of all, how's everybody doing in the land of COVID? We are opening up slowly but surely. The numbers are increasing, but not hugely. It's kind of hard to tell because the state government is kind of fudging the numbers sometimes. That's a story in its own, but it looks like people are really kind of out there. It's kind of wild. But anyway, tonight's show is Life in a Sex Commune. What I'm going to call it. That's right. One of our own family here at WRFG, Katia Kuhl, she is one of the other radio hosts. She also happens to co-chair the operations committee at WRFG, but she actually spent 17 years living in what the group describes themselves as. They describe themselves as an intentional community where members are invited to live together in open relationships and experiment with sex and intimacy outside of any traditional primary relationship they may be in. So the group is actually called Lafayette Morehouse. The group's been around since 1968, and Katia again spent 17 years there, and her experiences demonstrate how to live an intentional life free from the constraints of society's constructs around sex and gender identity, which is what I am all about. So we have her on tonight. Her story also happens to be very touching, as she met, lived with, and split from someone who she still describes as possibly the love of her life. So I certainly hope that you will hang around and listen to this touching and intense story. But before we do that,
news of the queer.
I know that's right.
Oh no, she didn't say what.
And I'm going to keep this local tonight because we have a number of things happening locally, and so I thought, you know, we probably need to keep it local. So that's what we're going to do. So first is a quickie. St. Mark's United Methodist Church is doing its part to fight the pandemic by offering free walk-up coronavirus testing for the next two Tuesdays and possibly beyond. So if you would like to get tested for coronavirus, it is free at St. Mark's, which is in Midtown on Peachtree, and I think it's on Peachtree anyway. Pretty sure it is. Anyway, so it is in Midtown, though, and it is every Tuesday, apparently, for the next two Tuesdays. So that's one thing. And, the LGBT-friendly church has partnered with the Fulton Board of Health and the Arthur Blank Family Foundation and Los Angeles-based disaster relief group CORE Response to make this happen, according to Reverend Joss Noblett there. So that's really cool. That's a bit of good news. Also, we have another bit of good news coming out of the governor's office. Well, the lieutenant governor. Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan broke his silence on a hate crimes law in Georgia. He actually, and by the way, Lieutenant Governor Duncan is a Republican, but he supports hate crimes law legislation. He calls for significant changes to a measure that's already passed the state house, but hold on, his changes aren't bad. Duncan, in a brief statement issued Friday, said a hate crimes law would make it clear that Georgians will not stand for hate and violence. This is an important piece of legislation and we need to get it right. Duncan, who leads the state Senate, where an LGBT-inclusive hate crimes bill stalled in 2019, said he wants changes to the legislation so that it includes civil court remedies for victims of hate crimes and improved training for law enforcement to better track hate crimes. As we work through this legislation, we want to make sure that victims of hate crimes have certain tools at their disposal. Victims of bias-motivated violence should have recourse in civil court, and I want to ensure that victims have a remedy for the rights they hold as Georgians. This is Duncan. And in our communities, state and local law enforcement officials, they need to have the proper training at their disposal in order to correctly identify, investigate, and prosecute hate crimes. So that's great news. The state Senate Judiciary Committee is expected to consider the hate crimes measure when lawmakers reconvene their session in mid-June. So that's just in a couple of weeks. And the state house had passed Bill 426, sponsored by another Republican, Representative Chuck Estrichan, in a 96-64 vote in March of 2019. Then State Senator Jesse Stone, chair of the Judiciary Committee, had killed the measure. But the measure itself would impose heightened penalties for crimes committed because of the individual's belief or perception regarding the victim's sexual orientation, gender, race, color, religion, national origin, mental disability, or physical disability. It does not include gender identity as a protected class, but supporters of the bill said the inclusion of belief or perception would allow it to cover transgender individuals. So we'll see what happens, but good for Lieutenant Governor Duncan, even though he's a Republican, stepping up and saying that hate crimes need to have strong penalties, and also rights for the victims. So I think that's really cool. So finally, one more thing. This is local too. Our own governor, Brian Kemp, is continuing to ease coronavirus restrictions, allowing bars and nightclubs to open. Yesterday, they could conceivably open with limited capacity and only if they follow a list of 39 mandatory guidelines. On Thursday, Kemp extended the state's public health emergency a third time to July 12th, but he announced that he would let his order closing bars and nightclubs to expire on May the 31st. Live performance venues will remain closed. So the restrictions are eased on public gatherings as well, and said that groups of as many as 25 can gather up from 10, only if physical distancing is followed. Bars and nightclub clubs can decide to reopen if they comply with strict sanitation and social distancing rules, all crafted to reflect industry practices and mitigate health risks. So if they choose to open nightclub venues will face reduced capacity. So the maximum capacity for bars now will be 25 people or 35% of capacity, whichever is larger. And just so that you know, Blake's, that means 75 people at a time, which Blake's will open on the 8th, I believe, of this month. A couple of the other gay bars are opening earlier. In addition to the limit on the number of people, the businesses will also be required to only serve drinks to seated patrons or those in designated areas. limit groups to 6 people and prevent customers from congregating. I don't know how that is going to jive with a bar. So it'll be interesting to see how bars are going to be able to actually make this work, because I don't know. That sounds kind of tough. But anyway, we will see how that works, and we will also be right back after this break.
Next to you, the sky is more blue in Malibu. Next to you, in Malibu.
And now, another message from our Public Affairs Bulletin Board.
On Wednesday, June 3rd, the Atlanta North Georgia Labor Council, in cooperation with the National AFL-CIO, is mobilizing a Workers First car caravan to demand continued health care and pay, safety on the job, and paid sick leave for workers in essential jobs and those being laid off. The assembly time is 10:30 a.m. at the IBEW parking lot at 501 Pulliam Street Southwest. The cars will be decorated with signs showing solidarity with the workers, who are oftentimes named in the song at the beginning of this show as, quote, those who do the work. More information can be found on Facebook Workers First Caravan or at 404-525-3555. And that is the Labor Council's phone number. Again, the Workers First Car Caravan on Wednesday, June 3rd, leaving 501 Pulliam Street Southwest at 10:30. That's Wednesday, June 3rd.
All right. That was a song by Prince, which I'd want to play more of, but we don't exactly have time for that. But the song is called Sexuality, which I think is quite appropriate for tonight's show. So we have a very special guest with us tonight, which I say that every single week, but anyway, I love her, and you probably do too. Her name is Katya Kuhl. And she's a fellow radio host here at WRFG. Katya hosts Muse Day Mashup Mixer here at WRFG Atlanta on Monday and Tuesdays as well. And I'm going to unmute you. Is that right? Is it Monday morning and Tuesday morning?
It's Monday midnight, Tuesday midnight. It's midnight to 3.
That's
right?
What you meant. That's what you meant. Okay.
Yeah.
So, yes. So, if you happen to be up at midnight or anywhere between there and 3 a.m., you can catch her show, which is quite interesting and quite unique. She's also the current co-chair of WRFG's Atlanta's Operations Committee. But all of that is not why she is here. Katya is here, and I don't know how much you listeners know about her personal life, but she has led a rather interesting sexual and romantic life over the last, I don't know how many years would you say, Katya?
Well, it's all been research, you know, so.
research, did you say?
Yeah. Right, research, you know.
Okay, so her sexual and romantic life is an exercise in research, which is interesting. But it also smacks of freedom. It does.
Because, yeah, that's sweet.
She has been in relationships with both men, women. She's been in relationships where it's her and one other, as well as multiple partners. She's been in a triad. She's also lived in what was known as a sex commune for 17 years. In short, Katya's sexual and romantic life is an exercise in what it means, what it truly means to be who you are, regardless of what society tells you. And this is, of course, what we're all about here at Alternative Perspectives. And for those of you that do not know, I should have said this at the beginning, but you are listening to WRFG Atlanta 89.3 FM. And this is Alternative Perspectives. This is Atlanta's only local radio hour devoted exclusively to issues affecting Atlanta's queer community. And I'm your host, Greg Bossen. And I should also say, and I'll say this once again, the opinions expressed here, I think I said it before, but the opinions expressed here are those of myself and my guests and do not necessarily represent the views of WRFG, its employees, board, volunteers, funders, or listeners. So we're here to speak with you, Katya, about all of the goings on in your sexual and romantic life. And I think you're an appropriate guest for this show because, as I've said before, we're all about deconstructing gender roles and throwing off what I perceive as the shackles of society's ideas about what it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman, and what you're supposed to do as it relates to relationships. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
It is an honor and a privilege. I listen every week, and I'm so excited to be a guest on the show this week. I really am.
Oh, and thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. I had the honor of subbing, covering Alternative Perspectives for a brief moment, and I really think you're doing a great job. You know, I am very interested in the same things you are. I know for certain that sexuality and gender cannot and should not define a person. I mean, and therefore I just really support your work on so many levels. I've gotten so much joy from listening and hearing you cover what I certainly perceive as taboo, air quotes, topics. Even at our beloved WRFG, it's a pretty it's a pretty heteronormative station. We can say that. And that also speaks to WRFG, their mission and their willingness to have the show, share the show, be loud and proud about alternative perspectives. I just think I'm really proud to be part of the team, and I'm really, really happy to be on your show today.
Well, thank you, Katya. And one thing that you already brought up, which I think is an interesting point, which is in the end, your sexuality, your romantic life, should not define who you are as a person, because we're not into labels here, right, Katya? I'm a person. I'm not a gay person. I'm a person is more what you're all about, and I agree. But in order to get there, it's ironic, right? But we have to talk about these aspects. We have to talk about romantic life. We have to talk about sexual life. I don't know that we want to normalize it, but we want to just be honest and have the freedom to do and be whoever we are, whatever that means for us, relationship-wise or gender-wise, which means we're sitting there talking about all this stuff, but yet at the same time, ultimately, we don't want to be defined by it. So there's an irony there, isn't there?
Yes, there is.
It feels like a means to an end in a way. You know,
I think for myself, my sexual orientations have, you know, changed over years. Certainly my ideas about a right relationship, like really dove heavy into what a right relationship is.
Yeah.
And people are certainly more comfortable with definitions and categories. You know, I mean, we start sorting in kindergarten, right? Before kindergarten, you know, you start sorting by color or shape. And I get that it's our nature, it's at least our acculturated nature to do so. However, I really do think that, and I think some people stick with a path because it's easier to stick with the definition. People, you know, it's interesting to not have a definition for who you are. You know, it's a little different to navigate.
I think it's unnerving for people. I think it's easier to understand the world in which you live if you're able to categorize. if you're able to label, if you're able to sort, you know, if there's no, you know, alphabet of letters that you stick in one, you know, you stick people in one or the other letter, if there's no alphabet, then, you know, how do you exist? How do you live? You know, people get freaked about it, which I think is really a good segue to, because I asked you a minute ago, how would you identify yourself? And you said that you consider yourself a responsible hedonist, is I think what you said.
That is what I said.
Yes. So I'd love to hear about what that means for you. What where did you, I don't think I've ever heard anybody say that before, but is that your own personal definition, or did you steal that from somebody?
I didn't steal it. I lived it. I lived it. Therefore I own it, but it was not something that I created. As you mentioned before, you know, the salacious statement would be I lived in a sex cult for 17 years, right? That'd be the salacious thing to say. But the truth is I lived in an intentional community that was started in the Bay Area in 1968, right? Everyone was talking free love. People really wanted to give it a try. They really wanted to buck the system. And so these people out in California, in Berkeley, specifically in Oakland, got together in 1968. Well, they're still together. I mean, imagine
the group still exists.
They not only do they exist, most of the founding members are still there. We're talking a group of about 50 people who are now in their 60s, okay, and early 70s. There aren't many. There's really only one other non-religious commune in America that has made it that long, okay? And so in my travels, and I have been quite the traveler, both inner and outer, you know,
right.
I found this commune. I was always motivated by sexuality and sensuality as a young girl. It was like, get your hands out of your pants, stop touching yourself, you know, stop, you know, stop, no, you know, I was just very, you know, the instigator in the backyard with all the neighborhood kids, and I didn't have any malice. We didn't, you know, there was nothing abnormal going on there except for good old fashioned curiosity and enthusiasm.
I'm going to stop you one quick second on that, since we're sitting in that time of your life right now. So you experienced no shaming from that, like your parents, or no one said anything like, you know, you should never do that. You're saying they take your hands out of your pants. So I'm wondering, I mean,
I got spanked. I mean, beyond shaming, I just got, you know, physically beaten for such activities, you
but
know.
But that didn't deter you? it didn't have an effect on your psyche at all. I mean,
well,
I'm asking.
It did.
Well, tell me that, because that's the thing that that's for me, you know, I was really hyped up around shame. I mean, I would never, you know, that I always felt very ashamed about my desires. And so it's interesting to me.
As did I. It was, okay. So back to the community, okay?
Okay?
They've got a name. They're called Lafayette Morehouse because they live in Lafayette, California, which is a suburb east of the East Bay of San Francisco. That's where I moved through most of my shame. I mean, I certainly thought I was bad. I remember praying to Jesus to forgive me as I would, you know, put my hands in my pants as a six-year-old, you know, like I really had a lot of shame. But living in this group, which they are responsible hedonists, and a hedonist by definition, a hedonist is someone that believes that what God, Goddess, Great Spirit gave us as our central nervous system and as our body and our psyche is holy and good. And if something pleases you and hurts no others, that's why you know, hedonism, pure pleasure. I know, right? The dogs are going nuts. Pure pleasure. No one else can be hurting to have genuine pleasure. If your pleasure is hurting someone else, then it's not actually pleasure. It's not responsible pleasure. And honestly, it's not pleasure. If there's a hangover in the room, if someone is there, I don't know what to do about my dog right now. This is like,
Well, yeah, have him come in. Have him come in. Well, and I'm looking at Lafayette Morehouse online, and it says over 50 years of pleasurable group living. It's an intentional community found in 1968, and their intention is to maximize potential both as individuals and as a group, and to have life be as much fun as possible. We present our life experiments in the form of courses. Oh, that's interesting. So, I mean, I guess what I'm wondering is, okay, well, let's just pick up where you left off there. If your joy is hurting someone else, then therefore it's not true joy. Does that mean that if you're having a physical relationship with someone and it's but yet you're in a relationship with someone else who's feeling jealous, hurt, and rejected by that, does that mean you don't do that?
That means, okay, how, I'm glad you asked that, because how I had the good fortune of being married for 17 years, okay? My only marriage, and I married a woman. We had a wonderful, best relationship ever. Basically, there's two sides to that, right? Because your partner is responsible also, right? For their mindset and their headset. If you're in a committed relationship and you're sharing, you're having a physical relationship with someone else, you have their permission. Like, responsible hedonism is you have their permission. You know,
and what if that person says that they, you know, they're working on it, but they can't handle it, and they would like for you to abstain for the moment.
Well, then you abstain. You know, if the partnership is what you value most, right? If you value that partnership, if you're in business with someone and they say, no, let's not make that move, and you just make that move, I mean, that's not going to make for a good partnership. So responsible, now, hedonism, you know, that's why we put that, emphasize the responsibility in that, the responsible, because, I mean, believe you me, my partner and I navigated a variety of landscapes around sharing one another.
Are you saying you were in this relationship with this woman while you were living in the commune, though? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's where I met her.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And, right, I met her, and I was certainly raised a straight girl. I knew that I had crushes on, like, Jodie Foster and Christine McNichol growing up. You know, I felt those stirrings, right? I felt those, hey, you can see why, right? I had those stirrings, but I also felt the same way about some of the male pop stars, you know, like, who was it? Like Leif Garrett, for sure, and someone else.
I'm laughing because those, Christy McNichol and Jodie Foster, those, and Andrea McCardle, by the way, where it's the third, well, those are the only three girls I ever thought that I was attracted to in the least. Because they're manly. They're kind of manly, you know.
Well, they're the middle of the continuum. In all honesty, they're like darn near gender neutral. You know, they're
yeah.
in that center spot along with some of the effeminate. You know, I always had crushes on soft guys with long hair.
Oh, I loved Leif Garrett. Loved him. I thought he was so hot. Not anymore. But you've seen him recently. But anyway, right. Beauty's in the eyes of the beholder. I know.
Right, exactly.
Well, go ahead, because I'm interested to hear how this played out. Was that something you navigated with your partner while you were in the
constantly, nonstop? Because here I got myself in a committed relationship with a woman because I loved her, but my deal was always up front. Like, look, I kind of prefer relating with women, but I really like making out with guys. I like making out with women, but there is something I get from guys I cannot and do not get from women. And if I have to choose between going forward in this relationship with you and committing to a life with no men sexually, I cannot do that. I can't do that. That is going to set us both up for, you know, it's just a lie. And I am not.
How long were you dating before you laid that out for her? Was that pretty close to the beginning? I guess if you're in a sex commune, those conversations are pretty typical.
They are very typical. I mean, looking at her, she had a boyfriend, and not really a boyfriend, but her baby's father. We lived with her baby's father and his first wife, who was her former girlfriend, and she had a current girlfriend. So
wow.
I you know what I'm saying?
Hold on, before you go any further, I want to, for those people that are just joining, you are listening to Alternative Perspectives on WRFG Atlanta 89.3 FM. I'm your host, Greg Boston, and we are speaking with fellow radio host Katia Kuhl about the many faces of her sexual and romantic life and what her story says about living honestly, fearlessly, and without concern for societal constructs.
Oh my God, I so wish I were fearless and of no concern.
Fearless doesn't mean not having fear. I guess fearless for me means having the fear and doing it anyway. But anyway, right. So you're in this commune, you're living with this woman and her, I guess, former sexual partner, if anything. They have
he was a great love of hers, but she basically, you know, from my perspective, had that baby for his wife, because they tried to conceive a few times. They never succeeded, and she loved that woman. My former partner, my ex-wife, it was certainly more into women than men. That man was like her only, other than one experiment at the age of 18, he was her only man she ever dated or loved.
So if you were to, I guess, say what the overarching issue was as it relates to, I guess, this aspect of your relationship. I'm sorry, but what's her name? What's your ex-partner's name?
Amy.
So if you were to say the one major, I guess, issue that kept coming up over and over again, what would that be between the two of you? Or is there one? I was wondering if there was one side or the other where it was something that was always happening.
Well, it's, you know, as most truths are, mm-hmm. especially when you come to humans, it's multidimensional. Like on the surface, she had a vote in all of my relationships with men. Okay. And for the first 15 years of our relationship, I did not date outside the community. I would court someone outside the community. But this community is very overt, and they were in the Bay Area in the time of the AIDS crisis. So they had their screening, you know, sexual screening in place. You are A, B, or C screened. When you move in, you get your STD tests and your blood tests, and then you stay within your group. You have limited contact. There's guidelines, and they're extremely helpful. They also slow down the sensual relating of two people who really want to make out, who are in partnerships. And just for clarity, not everyone at this commune shared one another. Like, there were a lot of long-term monogamous couples. They probably shared in their 30s and 40s, but now that they were in their 60s, that's not what they were up to anymore.
Gotcha.
So we had a lot of support, a lot more support than a couple is going to have out there, the two of them in a house, and trying to add on or have exciting experiences. You know, this is very different, because the people that I was engaging with sensually, we had all lived together for well over a year, and they had been together for many years. So the underlying issue between us was, on the surface, I started dating a man outside the community who she was a no to. And this is in our 16th year. And I was like, I am just so tired of you saying no. It's like, you know, I played the whole, you always say no to the fun ones, and then you're okay with the safe ones. And I wanted some risk, some danger. I wanted that thing that you get, you know. So that would be the surface answer, is I ignored her no. Because, you know, you asked me how to navigate adding on with a primary partner. I respected her no's. I mean, it's not like we didn't fight. It's not like I wasn't mad at her for saying no in the past, but I always chose the relationship over anything else that I wanted. It was my primary, it was my number one priority, was maintaining that. So what initially on the surface and from the outside, that would be that I just ignored her no vote. Okay. I ignored her saying no.
I'm going to say, let me just ask one question. Is it her saying no that made the other person more interesting, or did she really have a sense of the people that you really wanted were the people that she always said no for? Did she just have like a sense of that?
There was, again, so many levels. You're also talking to women now. You're not talking, you know, you're talking really multiply dimensional. And mm-hmm. she was, so there was the perception on my part that she was okay with casual, sensual, and sexual relating, but if I wanted any type of intimacy, if I wanted them to join us at family dinner, if I wanted to bring them closer in, we would almost always hit a block. Looking back, you know, I could have handled her so much better, handled her fears of loss, like really reassured her, but I never gave her that gift of being fully, I hate to explode, but I played on her insecurities, you know? I mean, looking back, that's what I did. Did I know I was doing that at the time? No. I was just taking this whole responsible hedonist thing as far as I could because, man, I really had found the promised land. Who doesn't want a long-term committed relationship with all the cards on the table and freedom to have, you know, new, freedom to have, you know, other encounters and experiences that your partner either doesn't enjoy? That's a hard one when you're in a, you know, you love the person and, you know, we all know at first the sex is usually pretty fun. Otherwise, who goes any further? But then you start to get into the nuances of things and sometimes they just shut down. But I feel like I'm kind of rambling. Oh,
no, not at all. Go ahead.
So there was that, the intimacy wall, you know, I didn't realize quite like kind of how possessive she really was. There was a lot of freedom, but then there was a boundary. Now on another level, Greg, and this really breaks my heart, you know, this really still breaks my heart, is that I don't think I ever really accepted. I didn't want to be a middle-aged queer lady. I didn't want to become the stereotypical couple of dykes who look alike. Okay. Like I really just remember wrestling with this. Now looking back, it's more like just like the air quotes middle age crisis, right? It's about navigating menopause with another woman and with yourself. And there really is a weight gain unless you really, really, really work super hard at it. And even so, there's going to be a little one. Like you cannot maintain the hot body of a 20 and a 30 year old forever. It's just not the contract we make. So I, you know, looking back, I really was super fearful of becoming that couple, you know, and it just, I'm embarrassed to say it. Before I was embarrassed to be it, but now I'm like, God, it was so close-minded, narrow-minded, you know, not really, So on one level, the end of our relationship was, I did not honor her no. And that's like, there's the truth, you know, but why didn't I honor her no? It was a lot of fear about society's perceptions, about my own perceptions of aging and the rightness of our relationship. Although I remember being so impassioned that I was choosing this woman over like what I considered my gender preferences. I really was raised, I really thought I was straight, but honestly, she's my greatest love, my longest love, the best sex of my life, the best partner I've ever had, you know, and she may very well, you know, be the love of my life. And part of it was like, fear, just fear of that perception of,
I understand exactly what you're saying because I think you've done a lot of good self-work, Katya, because it feels like you really have a clear handle on outwardly what ended the relationship, but then inwardly what the motivation behind it was. It hurts to hear, you know, to hear because it feels like in certain ways you view it with regret, as if you've made some sort of fatal error with your romantic life. And I really hope that I hope that you can come to peace with that and not see it that way. Because I don't, you know, you don't, it sounds like, oh, okay, well, this is what it is. But ultimately, we don't know what would have happened. You know, you may have needed to have left the relationship in order to come to this level of understanding. I don't know that you would have been able to have done that if you had stayed, you know. And where there is she?
Go ahead. There are great blessings in us parting, and that, Yim, you're going to love this. As I was the last run of my, like, he was really my first out of the community affair. Okay.
So you left her, and continued to see him?
No, I just lived with her in the same house and just went out, and she knew where I was going. I would tell her, you know, if she asked, but I just was just so flagrant in her face. But, there was something that we were talking. Oh, the regret piece. Well, yes, I regret it, and yet no, I don't. And that, and you are going to like this. As things were heating up with this guy, who turned out to be everything she said, he was a terrible. He was not a good person. You know, like, complete with having to go to court and get a restraining order. Not a good person. Right. So she's just like, I just don't like this. I got a bad feeling. And, you know, we used to joke that she had better taste in men than I did, you know, and I would try and surrender to her discernment because my track record was not great, you know, with the men. And she had super high standards for herself and for us. And that, I think, protected us for many, many years. And then I bucked it. But while I was on this thing, I was like, let's get her a girlfriend. I'm thinking, let's get Amy a girlfriend. That's going to handle, you know, I can finally get my wild oats out of myself and come back home to normalcy. So a young woman came around. She was really cute and she liked me a lot, but I was like, hey, have you met my wife? Right. and we added her on. Now, I thought she was an add-on, but she was certainly my replacement because I was gone, you know, like 90 days after we, you know, my wife wanted to move her in pretty quick and I was pretty resistant. And I remember the whole house meeting with me and, you know, pressuring me to let her move in. Like they were, and this is still in the community. This is still in the commune, but there's a branch here in Atlanta, right down the street from WRFG.
Really? Oh, wow.
And so,
do the branches intertwine?
Yeah, we are off that main group because there's no way you can, how do you navigate this? How do you navigate women's sexual freedom and men's sexual freedom, people's sexual freedom, like real sexual freedom? There's so much more to this, you know, than I can tell you in an hour. But when you look at Lafayette Morehouse's curriculum, you're going to see the courses are basic sensuality, advanced sensuality, man-woman, which they now call the gender course. There is fundamentals of sensuality where you see the demonstration of a woman in orgasm for an hour as a class, like on a gynecological table with digital stimulation. Like there's a lot of information because when the group got together in 68, they were all 17, 18, 20. And the big thing was sex. The big thing they would fight about, money, power, sex. Same thing couples fight about. Same things all groups argue over is money, power, sex. And their joke is, well, they started researching sex first because it was so fun. They never stopped, right? So
I got you on a tangent again. I'm sorry. So you were talking about how the relationship ended, I think. So she moved her in fairly quickly.
We moved her in really quickly. It lowered our baseline group agreements to what it takes to live in the house, which we always said was very unfriendly because you're operating with a high level of agreement on things that are outside society's norms. Okay? You just are. And that includes navigating jealousy. I mean, it's not like I moved her in. It's not like I didn't feel jealousy. You know, I would watch my wife touch the back of her neck. It was funny, the things that would trigger me, you know, but like watching my wife touch the back of her neck for reassurance, like she used to touch mine, like would just, you know, break my heart, you know, and I had set this up myself. So I had to look at and accept that. But much like my sexuality, it's easy to just go really fluid and willy-nilly. So what were we talking about?
Well, we were talking about the end of the relationship. And actually, if you, I do need to take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll talk about the ending of that relationship and the leaving of the cult. I mean, we could go on forever, it seems like. But anyway, we will be right back. You are listening to Alternative Perspectives.
I love you so. I want you to know that I'm gonna miss your love the minute you walk out that door. So please don't come.
And now, another message from our Public Affairs Bulletin Board.
In response to the racist murders of George Floyd in Minneapolis, Ahmaud Arbery in Brunswick, and Breonna Taylor in Louisville, among others in recent weeks, the Alliance for Black Lives, the Georgia Alliance for Social Justice, and other civil rights and faith-based organizations are calling for a protest march and rally on Sunday, June 7th, from noon to 2 p.m. The gathering site is the Gwinnett Place Mall at Pleasant Hill and Satellite Boulevard. Additional information can be found at the Facebook event page, Justice for Black Lives, or by email at alliance4blacklives@gmail.com. Again, the date for this protest march and rally is Sunday, June 7th, from noon until 2 p.m.
Over time, I've been building my castle of love.
All right. And we are back. You are listening to WRFG Atlanta 89.3 FM. This is Alternative Perspectives, Atlanta's only local radio hour devoted exclusively to issues affecting the queer community. I'm your host, Greg Bossen, and we are speaking with fellow radio host Katya Kuhl. By the way, at WRFG, they call us air shifters, but I didn't know what that meant, so that's why I'm calling you a radio host, Katya. And we're speaking with Katya about the many faces of her sexual and romantic life and what her story says about living honestly, fearlessly, and without concern for societal constructs. I know that makes you laugh. And I do need to, Katya corrected me at the break. And two times, now I will say, Katya's been, she spent 17 years living in a commune. By the name of what is it called again? Lafayette Morehouse, and two times I referred to it as a cult, and it's important to understand that it is a commune. Cult is a very loaded word that has lots of negative connotations, and there's this assumption that you can't leave. Yeah, you can't leave. That's probably important.
You can't leave, and you have a super strong leader that dictates what you do. I mean,
which is the opposite of what happened with you. you were allowed to leave.
I was encouraged to go.
You still talk to everybody there, I guess, I assume, or do you? Do you have any connection?
Yeah.
Can you come visit?
Well, of course I can. I still own part of the real estate. I mean, you know, I'm not a, you know, I still own part of the real estate. It's an intention. Even call it a commune we really called ourselves always an intentional community, which there's a whole intentional communities directory online. You can find thousands of them through the U.S. Most of them are eco-based. It's, you know, it's primarily people that want to live like off the grid or close to nature. But we were more of a socio, you know, we are more socially motivated, more like let's look at social norms and let's see which ones work for us and how to navigate, you know, like that. So
you also said, you almost said deconstruct, which is what I like, but you stopped. Is there a reason why you didn't say deconstruct? Did it not feel?
Because since we were responsible hedonists, like we really did, it was more fun to just look, notice, and explore. If deconstruction happened, which it kind of did, I have found through living, you know, 17 years living with people that are 20 years your senior, who've been together for 30 years before you got there, they obviously, there's a strong level of agreement. They've had experiences, they've shared, you know, intimacy is something you build over time, right? And so when you enter a pool of such strong intimacy, and they've been wildly successful, I mean, to navigate living together communally for 50 years, I mean, they own millions of dollars of property, possibly, you know, hundreds of millions, I would suspect, because they've got 30 acres next to Walnut, next to Walnut, California, which is very high end. You know, it's where the Tiffany's is and such. But,
well, I'm going to interrupt because we only have a few minutes left, and we've left our listeners in this space, which I hear a little echo, by the way. I'm not sure why that is. But anyway, we've left our listeners in this space where you were looking at the ending of your relationship. And so I wanted just to finish that out. So what ultimately happened? And then where are you now is kind of where I want to end. So
thank you. Ultimately, sure. My ex-wife, we got her the girlfriend and they're still together and they're very happy. Like, this young woman who I handpicked as a good companion for my former partner, Amy, they're still together and they appear to be getting everything they want from one another. It's really gratifying to me. It's my mission in life. You know, I have it that you've got to leave things better than you found them. And I don't think a lot of people treat their personal relationships like that because it's slower and it's harder. You don't get to just sever ties. You have to stay in a murk for a while, but she's very happy and they're very supportive of me and our daughter, because Amy and I raised a son and a daughter together. We met pregnant. That was our main bond, in my opinion, is that we became a nuclear family and it was the family first. So both of our kids are juniors in their prospective universities and faring well. I feel like we raised good kids and that was our primary objective, in all frankness and honesty. And so she's happy. The business that she and I started, mainly her. I won't, you know, try to take much credit. That was mainly her. It was her love, her drive, her business acumen, and her dedication. I got to raise the kids. It was great. But the business we started together is still thriving. And there is strong love and still commitment on a different, you know, in a different way. But I am there for her and her partner if they ever need, and they know that. And same is true them for me. Whenever I have needed advice, you know, Serafina having a medical scare and me sitting at the Emory Hospital alone as her adult, I'm like, oh no, I have to call Amy. I gotta call Amy and Mel. I need to, you know, I need advice. I need support. So it ended well. And there were other things in the community going on. It was very hard for me to live with our son's father. He and I did not see eye to eye. I had had the luxury of raising his son without him interfering because we didn't live in the same city. You know, me and Amy moved to California with the kids. He was back here in Atlanta. When we came back and the kids were 12, I had been raising his son, but all of a sudden we lived in the same house again. And frankly, that was incredibly difficult. So,
You left and moved back in?
Amy and I took the kids to California when they were 4, and we came back when they were 12.
Amy,
me, Amy, and the two kids. We were a foursome. and we started in the Atlanta Morehouse.
Okay.
From 98 to 2004. Then we moved to California, partially because I was so insistent that I be allowed access to males and we needed support, you know, and there were other things. We were navigating, you know, her baby's daddy on his second wife, and that wife did not really care for it. It was just a lot, you know, a lot, as people would say, and they're like, oh my God, it's too much. But I'm like, honestly, I don't see things going any differently in the general collective, except there's less honesty and there's less forgiveness. You know, people that have their own house, you don't have to forgive someone that you don't see, you know, but if you're still living with someone and you've hurt one another, you learn, like, now you're stepping into unconditional love. To me, it's conditional if it's all based on the contract and the finances and where you live, whether you can stay and forgive. But
we've got really just a couple minutes now. So you you moved. So I guess just go ahead and tell me.
Yeah, I will.
What happened?
Okay. They are happily living. They do not live in the communal house now. The Amy and Mel and their kid. They have another. They have a nuclear family going. I myself didn't really know what to do. Kind of traveled around for a little bit and then bought a house, fortunately, in Atlanta before things got really wild. I could see the writing on the wall. So I managed to find myself a cute little bungalow where I reside. And my daughter, who is a junior at Emory, stays with me, you know, goes back and forth to school. And I'm enjoying the freedom of being a postmenopausal woman, a woman who is no longer driven by her desire to get a partner or her desire to prove herself or her desire to procreate. Now I'm like, and from 13 to 49, that is what drove me, you know, in all honesty. And that's pretty common. We're looking for social acceptance. We're looking for love. We're looking for affection. We're looking for security, you know, and now I'm on my own. I have a great circle of friends and I am hesitant to jump into another relationship because I don't even know what it would look like. And I just feel as though there's probably another one in my future at some point. And why rush into that when this is, you know, this is really freedom. This is the first time that I have felt truly free since ever.
Yeah. And I feel sure too, that there's a relationship in your future. As a matter of fact, when you helped me with the one show, and one of my guests, Nick, who's straight and in his 20s, but somehow he was just completely taken by you. So, you have something that people notice, and it is definitely still there.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, of course. And I wish we could talk more, but Katya, you're amazing. Cool. And we'll definitely have you back on the show.
Thank you for having me. I do invite guests to tune in to Musday Mashup Mixer Tuesday morning from midnight to 3 because I do cover relationships, sensuality, sexuality, sex and aging, things of that nature. So thank you for having me.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you to our listeners. And go out and tell somebody you love them, but don't touch them. COVID! See you next week.